Hi, friends. My name's Lauren, and I am recovering from compulsive overeating and restricting. It's good to see you guys this morning. I'm a little nervous, but I know that I'm just going to be a channel for my higher power today. And I have been thinking about I have some ideas of what I want to share with you guys. I'll qualify. I'll just start by saying what it was like. I first came into OA when I was 16, and it was 1982. And what had been happening for me as an adolescent is I started to binge and to just eat a lot of junk. And at the simultaneously, I began to become obsessed with my weight and my body, as like I would say, as about like a 13-year-old. And when I was doing certain behaviors with food, I started to get some idea that it really wasn't normal, like what I was doing. When I was in high school, like I would, go to like this little pizza joint after school, and I would basically have like a meal, and then I would go home, and then like I would have dinner after school, and then I would go home and I would have dinner again. But it was like the quality of my eating. Like I kind of knew that when I was eating, I was kind of in this like kind of frenzy of eating. Which I came to understand was a binge, and that I would just be in this frenzy of eating until I felt satiated, and then I would be done. I was never into throwing up, but what I would do was like dieting, just not eating. So I would do like binge and starve. I was always trying to make up for the binging with some kind of restriction. I went on, I ended up, well, I also did like diet pills for a while, and I also like went on this Scarsdale diet back then, and I lost like 25 pounds in a month. And it was really kind of a starvation kind of diet. And then I went to work in a restaurant in the summertime, and I was like working in the dessert section. And you guys, forgive me, I know a lot of you have heard this story before, but anything that was broken, or we couldn't serve it, and so we would just break things. And this was like gourmet desserts, like and I gained all of that weight back that I just lost on this diet. In this really public, humiliating way, where I was just kind of busting out of my clothes, for a teenage girl who's obsessed with the way she looks, like it was really humiliating and devastating. I had a friend at school who was in OA, and I saw them kind of lose weight or something, and they told me what they did. I went to a meeting. They held hands and said the Our Father prayer at the end of the meeting, and I was like, okay, I'm never going back there. And as a teenager, I would say an atheist, and then as a teenage punk rocker, I became like a really kind of a radical atheist, and I was very anti a lot of things, anti, I mean, I was just against the world, like everybody. I had a judgment and a label for everybody. I always get this story wrong. I went to the OA meeting before I went on the diet, and in that humiliating way, gained all the weight back. And so it was after I had gone on that diet and gained all that weight back, I was humbled. I was like, I was scared. I was looking at a number on the scale that I had never seen before, and I was really scared. And I think the fear also came out of a restriction place, you know. So I came into the program, and thankfully, there was a woman in the first meeting that I went to. You know, I got up and I shared, "Hey, I'm an atheist. I don't know what to do about this." And she came up to me afterwards. Her name was M Mina, and she said, and this is like in 1982, and I still remember this woman's name, you know. And she said, "It's okay, I'm an atheist too." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And so great. And so OA was my higher power. OA and the meetings were my higher power for a long time. And I came in really, you know, because I'd really seen how crazy the addiction was. I had seen myself really out of control, like really out of control in a really humiliating kind of public way, you know, like sneaking, eating those desserts like at work, you know. And it was just such a humility, you know. I was humbled and I was scared and I was ready to, I was willing to go to any lengths when I came into the program, like the literature says. And I got a sponsor. I started working tools and I started working steps. I got abstinent right away. And it was a pretty strict food plan as well. And now looking back on it, I haven't had a lot of abstinence that was kind of that strict. It's almost kind of resembles a diet, you know. But that worked for me for a while. I didn't have to mess around with food, and I really got into the steps. So I went through the steps with multiple sponsors. I also did these step working groups back on the East Coast. So this was back in Philadelphia, where I'm from. And these groups were called AWOLs, which means a way of life. And those were really helpful for me to be able to go through the steps, do another fourth step, you know. And so that's what it was like, and that's what happened. So I kind of want to talk about, like, you know, what works for me. And I'm sorry, I'm not the speaker getter told me that it was speaker's choice, so I didn't realize it was a tradition. So I'm not going to talk about the tradition at all. I'm going to talk about like my relationship with my higher power, and I'm going to talk about what it means for me that the recovery is a way of life, because I really believe that it is the transformation of my way of life that has allowed me to have sanity, to have happiness, to have healing, and of course to have abstinence. And you know, my abstinence isn't perfect, of course, you know, it's quite flawed at times. And honestly, I almost feel like my disease is a gift from my higher power. It is a way that my higher power reminds me of what size I am and reminds me that I'm not in charge. You know, the AA Big Book, which is the literature that I used, we didn't have OA literature in the early 80s. And I still really love the AA literature today. To be honest, I haven't read the OA literature. Most of it anyway. I have the Brown Book. I think I've read a little bit of that, but I find the AA literature is very simple, and it's written in a way that I can really hear. Okay, I think I lost my train of thought. So yeah, I lost my train of thought. So these times when I worked through the steps, I feel that each time working through the steps, I'm getting to know my higher power better, and I'm getting to know my disease better, right? Like for me, it's very critical coming into the program to write out a step one and to really understand, to really see my disease in a really stark way. And for me, writing a step one does that. I see the timer, Lori. Thanks.
I'll set it again.
Okay, thanks. You know, getting to do a fourth step inventory and to talk about that to a higher to w with another person. These are ways that I can really see, like, I can really kind of see, get a sense of like my get an accurate read of like, okay, how much power do I have here? I don't really use the word shortcomings, but it's like there's a lot of things that I need to work on, and oh yeah, I think I was saying that that I feel that my disease is like a gift. Oh, I think I said that already. Yeah, because it reminds me that I need a higher power, So the challenges for me, right? I mean, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. I also think that my mother was a sex addict, and I have a lot of and I do believe that what happened in my family of origin really kind of caused my addiction or transmitted the addiction to me, because this is an intergenerational disease, as I understand it. And so as a baby and a little tiny girl who didn't really have caregivers that were attuned to her, or that had the bandwidth or the capacity to really be able to be present, to track me, to care for me, right? I developed a lot of things that kind of, set me up for like, needing to use food in this way. And other things too, like I'm also a recovering alcoholic, I'm a recovering drug addict, I'm a recovering sex and love addict. And I've been to all these fellowships too. Like, I mean, it's my recovery has been kind of like a whack-a-mole kind of thing. And that's fine. Like, I've always gone to the fellowship where the fire is the biggest, right? And I'm fine with that. And that's really worked for me. And thank God that I've been given all these fellowships. Like, it is mind-blowing to me the amount of help that my higher power has provided for me. So it's kind of like I have this addiction, this broad-reaching addiction, right? And I have all of this help. I have all of this help, and all I have to do is ask for help, right? But can I ask for help? That's really hard for me, right? Because growing up with these people that didn't have any bandwidth to, like, I asked those people for help. I straight up, like, I had an abusive brother who was physically abusive to me. He used to kind of psychologically, like, tease me and really, like, kind of psychologically torment me. And I would cry to my mother, and she would be like, "Figure it out, Lauren." That's exactly what she said to me as a child. Like, "Just figure it out, Lauren," And so I learned, like, not to ask for help, and that you don't ask for help because you don't get the help. And furthermore, you'll be shamed for needing help, So it's still a challenge for me today to experience vulnerability and to ask for help, right? But my higher power really wants me to ask for help, and that I, I'm beginning to understand that I'm, as a human being, I'm really not meant to be doing this alone. I'm part of a spiritual community, and a concept in our spiritual community is this. It's a Portuguese word. It's união, means union, right? And it is like this kind of like the oneness of humanity, and that we real, this whole idea that, like, I get to ask for help. It's like my birthright as a human being to ask for help, to receive help, to give help, because we are uniao, we are in union, right? All of the fellowships, we are in union. The steps talk about, we admitted we were powerless. There's nothing in the steps that says I. It's all we, And so really letting that sink in, right? And in these last few minutes, what I'll talk about is, so this way of life of recovery, right? This partnership with my higher power, which involves me getting honest, right? The keys of the program: honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. How? That is how this program works, right? And so the honesty of step one, the honesty of step four, and that I have to continue to be honest every day to the best of my ability, right? Open-mindedness about what my higher power can do for me, open-mindedness about, like, oh, you know what? I'm afraid to call this person because I still feel that way. I'm afraid to call people. I'm like, I'm 57 years old and I'm like a psychotherapist, and I'm afraid to call people on the phone. Okay, so that there you go, right? But this way of life is that, and it says it in the AA Big Book. It talks about that the higher power is the director, and it talks about a partnership with the higher power, or higher power, however you choose to conceptualize that. So working these steps has allowed me to understand and engage in a partnership with my higher power. But I really want to talk about service, because of my profession, I am able to do this service. But it's like, for me, I realize, like, it is absolutely critical for me to, and I think I'm very blessed to be able to do the work that I do because I am in service, like, continuously. And it is absolutely critical for me to be in service. And that I've come to understand that the purpose of my life is service. Now, these, like, all of these ideas when I first came in, and even 15 years ago, maybe, these still were like kind of like, oh, step 12, I kind of like that. I kind of like it. That's cool, right? But I didn't really understand service as a way of life, right? I didn't understand, like, what these alcoholics were talking about, that we must give it away to keep it. And what I have found is, in this journey that I've had towards, becoming a psychotherapist and working as a psychotherapist, and just even anytime I pick up the phone and call a fellow, even if I need their help, I'm also doing a service, right? But that, okay, I lost my train of thought again. Well, I think it's almost time for me to stop. I just want to say that service really keeps me sober. It keeps me clean and sober, and it keeps me connected with the higher power. The higher power is all of these really good things, like love and peace and clarity, acceptance. When I'm in a service place, I can connect to that, and that's like that involves contact with another human being, and that's why they say you have to give it away to keep it. You have to be in service. And yeah, so I think, I still have a lot of challenges. I'm actually feeling like, I need to do another fourth step. I'm actually, you guys, like, I'm actually, my ex-husband contacted me and asked me if he could do a ninth step with me. And that is happening today. And so I'm just like, okay, Lauren, just like, buckle your seatbelt here. And then this is not about you. And this is not about your fourth step. This is not your ninth step. This is your ex-husband's ninth step. And you're just going to receive it, right? It's kind of mind blowing, you guys, because it was a shit show for a while with my ex-husband, okay, in my addictions. So it's a blessing, right? It's a blessing. Yeah. So you guys, thank you so much for being here in Uniao with me. I couldn't have my recovery without you. My wish is, and I'll wrap up. My wish is that we can all have a good connection with the higher power, and to move forward in a good way in our recovery, to feel healing, to feel self-love, to be able to open more to other people and to let other people love us and love others, and that we can feel more Uniel in our lives. Thank you all.